The Trump campaign is not giving an inch. Not one inch. This thing is heading all the way, mark my words, to the Supreme Court. Hello, everyone. I am Trish Regan. This is The Trish Regan Show. So good to have you here. Yes, a little bit of a setback, shall we say, in Michigan. But in some ways, it's good to get the news out of the way, right? Because that clears the deck so he can move this forward through legal channels, which is why I do believe it will wind up in the Supreme Court. The Trump folks have told us, by the way, as much, saying they intended to take it there and that they're probably going to have to. Look, Hillary Clinton would do the same thing. Do not forget what Hillary Clinton told her former communications director, who's now moonlighting over at Showtime TV, in an interview over the summer. She said Joe Biden should not concede no matter what. Remember that? She said, if it's close, he should not concede. He should lawyer up. Well, that is exactly what the Trump campaign is doing. And I want to tell you, the mainstream media right now, they want you to think that this was some kind of landslide. In fact, there was an article in The Guardian over the weekend that Apple promoted with this headline: Joe Biden won the election by a wide margin. Yeah. Seriously, they want you to think that he won by a wide margin, and therefore this is not to be challenged in court at any time, any place. But you know what? When you drill down and you really look at those numbers, I'm sorry, that was not a wide margin. I mean, I get that nobody in the media can do math. I mean, really seriously, they can't. But nonetheless, there's no way at all. I mean, you're talking about a difference of 74,927 votes. Remember that number, 74,927 votes. That's what it currently is. Out of a total votes cast, number of 153,613,774. So you know what that means. It means a 0.049% margin of victory. And somehow they want us to think that that's a landslide. Do they think we're that dumb? I mean, unfortunately, they do, right? And they think that we're going to take whatever they say as gospel. So when Apple puts it out there, quote, Joe Biden won the election by a wide margin, when it was only 0.049% of the vote, they want us to believe it. You know why they want us to believe it? Because they don't want us to think it's okay for the Trump camp to be challenging this in court. But you know, they would do the exact same thing. And by the way, the media would be sitting there, you know, covering every inch of the story. You know they would. I mean, so just consider putting yourself in the Trump camp's shoes right now. You're looking at 10,457 votes in Arizona. You're looking at Georgia, a margin of just better than 12,000 votes. Wisconsin, 20,000 votes. This is not a lot, right? But you're talking about a lot of electoral votes. So maybe on the electoral side, they're, oh, you know, my gosh, you know, because he won Arizona by 10,000 votes, it's 11 electoral votes. And then they're able to make this jump to he won the election by a wide margin. This is not a wide margin, folks. Okay. And so it's once again proof that those that hate Trump in the mainstream media, in big tech, will continue to hate him. And they don't want him to have any opportunity to fight back. Now, I get the whole argument, oh, you know, we can't do that. You know, we can't fight back. This is a democracy. Listen, part of having a democracy is ensuring that everybody believes in the sanctity of their vote, right? We have to know that when we go to vote, it matters. And when then that's in question, it creates all kinds of other problems. So I would only remind everybody what we just went through for the last 4 years. I mean, Joe Biden this summer was still out on the few times he was out on the campaign trail, the few times he got out of the basement, he actually said the words that Trump had stolen the election. This is what they repeated to us every single night. I mean, you know, the leftist media, they kept telling us how he had stolen the election with the help of Russia. That was treated like some kind of fact. I kept saying, but wait a second, this is sort of a conspiracy theory, right? Now, let me back up, because initially when this story was first floated, I'm willing to give anything a chance. I need to know my facts, right? I need to know what I'm talking about. And so I did my own research and my own due diligence. And granted, I didn't have, you know, the Mueller team working on my behalf. But I did what I could do so that I could be comfortable around the story. And my conclusion was, this was a bunch of sour grape people that were angry that Donald Trump had won in 2016. And they were trying to explain it to themselves. And the only way they could explain it to themselves is to say, or was to say, that it had been stolen. And then to think, you know, as we back up, once again, where the heck is our government on this? Weren't we supposed to have an investigation? Where is John Durham on this? I would like to know, because there are a lot of questions that have not been answered, right? And I don't know how it is that you wind up in a situation where your own campaign there, the Trump campaign, was being spied upon by the Obama administration based off of faulty, you know, ex-spy documents written by a guy that, by the way, was questionable. Our own FBI was concerned about him being a spy for Russia. He's the guy who wrote this stuff, the guy that worked for Christopher Steele. And this was opposition research that was bought and paid for by Hillary Clinton's team. I mean, the whole thing is so messed up. And yet they sold this narrative. They pounded on this narrative that Donald Trump was an agent of the Russians, some kind of Manchurian candidate, that he was Putin's puppet, willing, ready, and able to do whatever Vladimir Putin needed and wanted. And that's what they went with. I mean, it was wild conspiracy style stuff. And so now, when the Trump campaign comes back and says, gee, you know, it's a little strange, 12,000 plus votes in Georgia, and we have examples of this many counties really screwing up. I mean, in some cases, losing 2,000 plus votes. Or, you know, in Michigan, they're putting them in the wrong column. I'm sorry, but you can't come forward and then say that this was a massive landslide, because it absolutely, positively was not. Which is why, let's go back to where we started. The Trump campaign is going to see this through. The Trump campaign is going to take this as far as they can take it, all the way to the Supreme Court. And it's really important that they do, because I'll tell you, if Donald Trump is not in that office on January 20th, and Joe Biden is, he's got a whole team of like Obama 3.0 people around him that he's trying to put into action. If that's the team, we should all be worried. And we should be even more worried, more and more worried, if in fact the Democrats see any success in Georgia. I sure hope not. I sure hope that the Republicans are able to keep Georgia. It is critical to our country. You've heard me say this. I'm going to say it again. All right. So we need him to pursue every legal avenue, and we need people to hightail it down to Georgia and do some work, because Stacey Abrams is bragging about 750,000 absentee ballots getting sent in. Are we really still using absentee ballots? I'm on it next. 750,000 absentee ballots. That's what Stacey Abrams out of Georgia, remember her, she lost. That's what she says she's got, because she's like doubled down on her ground game. And I'm troubled. I'm troubled that we're still using these absentee ballots. And I want to know, are they going to go on like forever? Are they going to get grandfathered in now? Is this a new way of doing things? If so, I'll tell you one thing. Conservatives better up their ground game when it comes to mail-in ballots, because the Democrats are all over this, right? And when you think about the possibility of things that can happen when you're dealing with mail-in ballots, and we've seen it, it becomes very, very treacherous territory. But again, the Democrats are pouring all kinds of money into Georgia right now. Chuck Schumer says, first we take Georgia, then we take the world. Then we change the world. Forgive me. We change the world. This is the great reset, right? The great reset that, frankly, is going to take America in a really, really bad direction if it is allowed. So let's go back to this whole absentee ballot thing, which I do find really troubling, because it used to be that, you actually had to show up in person. What I would like to see is people show up in person, unless, by the way, they got a really good doctor's note, right? A good excuse. You got to have an underlying condition. You got to be elderly, something that really would prevent you, right, from being at the polls or going to the polls because of COVID-19. And then, by the way, we got to fix this so that COVID-19 is not the threat, so people are back there in the voting booths. But my concern is that this is going to be the new norm. And the Democrats are going to try and use this to their advantage. And so the Republicans need to outsmart them on this one. I know that they can get a lot of people out to vote at the polls, but what's going on behind the scenes ahead of that? So again, she's talking about $750,000. She's got tons of money that's pouring in. You got Hollywood stars saying, you know, do whatever you can for Georgia. You get people talking about relocating to Georgia just specifically for this January runoff. I mean, this is alarming stuff. And this is our country that's really being held in the balance, if you would. So it's critical that the base get out there, that everybody stay motivated, and that we not allow this. Meanwhile, I want to dig in on these absentee ballot things, because, you know, we ought to, as a nation, be smart enough, given our success that we have had, given our might, our creativity, our economy, still number one economy in the world. We'll see if Joe Biden's able to keep that up if he gets into the seat. Anyway, we've had this tremendous ability to succeed on so many fronts. Why can't we figure this out? Why can't we find a way to keep people safe when they go to vote? Right? Just hire more poll workers. Do what you got to do. Get special booths with disinfectant, you know, have it outside. You can put some heat lamps out there if it's a cold day in Georgia. I'm sorry, but we ought to be finding a way to make sure that people are doing this in person, as opposed to this giant mail-in ballot thing, which is so susceptible to so many different problems. Anyway, this is why I keep saying, come on, conservatives. Think about the future right now. We've got to stay focused on this. Otherwise, it really will be Obama 3.0. He's getting the whole team in there. Janet Yellen, John Kerry. Hear about some other choice picks next. All right, we got the news that the GSA is starting this transition process to president-elect, they say, Joe Biden. I mean, again, it's still going to go through the courts, but apparently, Emily Murphy said in a letter that was addressed to Joe Biden on Monday that she would begin this process. But apparently, this is because of a lot of threats that she had gotten that were very concerning. And, you know, that's not right. That's not right. Because, again, you've got to let the legal process play out. Right. That is a really critical thing right now. And we need to make sure that has happened so that we as a nation, I think, can feel confident in whatever the future is. Meanwhile, the future. Oh, dear. Like I said, I mean, the future, if he's successful, is Obama 3.0. I mean, it's Obama 3.0. It's Obama like squared. Right. Because this is Obama on steroids. I mean, if you thought Obama was creeping into socialist territory, get ready, everyone. I want to talk about Janet Yellen, who's she's his pick for the Treasury Department. Now, she was the former head of the Federal Reserve. I remember the day she got the gig. I was down there. We did special coverage. It's really cool. I mean, she's first woman Fed chair. She's now going to be the first woman Treasury Secretary. So, you know, hats off to her. My gosh. I mean, she's got a twofer. You know, first woman everything. Here's the problem I have with Janet Yellen, and it's not personal. I mean, she really strikes me as a lovely person, and she did what she could given the challenging economic environment we were in during those Obama years. But this is a woman who thinks that she can effectively, like they all do, play God, right, with emotions and the normal sort of push-pull of any human being and markets. This is the problem, frankly, with the Fed. I mean, she got sort of nicknamed the fairy godmother of the markets behind the scenes, right? Because it was like Cinderella's fairy godmother, bibbidi bobbidi boo, and boom, suddenly the market would go up because interest rates were going down or staying forever down, or there's another round of QE, whatever you name it, she was ready, willing, and able to help. And this is rather symptomatic of a lot of Fed folks. I mean, Powell ran into trouble with the president because he wasn't as willing as Janet Yellen to do what he could initially. I often wondered if he should have left Janet Yellen in the seat because she was so dovish. But it's one thing to be on the monetary side. It's another thing to be on the fiscal side. So she was very dovish on monetary policy. Now she's going to go and she's going to be in government And she's going to continue to have that dovish attitude. The only difference is, instead of printing money at the Fed now and effectively depreciating our currency while doing so, she is going to be able to use taxpayer dollars. She's going to have much more opportunity to influence things on that end. And that is scary to me. That is troublesome because, I'm sorry, $27 trillion in debt. We can't keep this going. I mean, you just can't. And that's not something that I think Federal Reserve folks tend to really, I mean, maybe they get it on one level, right, theoretically, but they're always still willing to print. So what happens when she's then in charge of the Treasury? Meanwhile, you get John Kerry, who's emerging back on the scene. John Kerry is going to be the climate czar. So I imagine they've got lots of plans in the works for some kind of climate thing. The big green energy plan. Listen, money doesn't grow on trees. Okay. And it's important that at some point there be some adults in the room, which is why I get back to Georgia and I get back to the Senate. And frankly, I get back to the president's efforts to try and win this election. And though his path is increasingly frustrating, the reality is he has to pursue the legal means, anything he can. He's got to pursue right now. It's important, I think, for the country. It's important for all the people that supported him, and they want to know that he's committed. And again, my sources within the campaign say they are committed. So they're going to keep it going. So stay tuned. We're going to be all over it at trishintel.com. Make sure you go to the website, sign up for the podcast if you haven't already, and I will see you back here tomorrow.